I'd like to convene the Finance Committee and members. We have the minutes for February 14th in the packet. Representative Pawlowski, have you looked at them? The last time I gave you the opportunity, you turned me down.
Mr. Chair, I've exhaustively examined them, and I'm fairly tired because of the length of them. I can't believe they're this detailed, and I have to compliment your staff. So with that, I will move the minutes.
And you understand why I called on you today?
I absolutely understand.
Okay, the motion for approval of the minutes is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We'll have two bills up tonight, and the first one is House File 2553 by Representative Winkler, the Catastrophic Survivor Compensation Fund being established and appropriating money. That bill was most recently in the State Government Finance Division, so Representative Kahn, would you care to move the division report? Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Kahn?
Oh, okay. I move that House File 2553 first committee reimbursement be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us, and Representative Winkler, would you care to walk us through the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'll try to jog in the interest of time rather than walk.
I think everybody would be appreciative.
Okay, for those of you who have heard this several times before, I'm sorry, but there are a lot of new faces finally. You get enough through enough committees, and finally you'll run into legislators you've never served with on a committee. We're all familiar with the 35W bridge collapse. I don't think that needs any introduction. The survivor stories are familiar, I think, to us all, from the injuries and loss of life, but also lost wages, medical expenses rising into the hundreds of thousands of dollars, future disability, and a whole series of financial hits that they are facing. We can't do anything about the physical injuries or the lost loved ones, but we can try to address, as a state, the financial situation of these survivors. It's important to note at the outset that the state has a liability cap structure in place, which is $1 million for any one incident or $300,000 for any one individual affected by that incident. In this case, if we do nothing and these survivors are able to overcome a number of procedural hurdles and successfully sue the state of Minnesota, they can collect at a maximum $6,000 per person. I think that number sort of speaks for itself. From my point of view, the bridge was the state's responsibility to design, build, maintain, inspect, and I think it's our responsibility to deal with the human side of this catastrophe as much as we deal with the concrete and steel. The bridge, the concept of the fund is simply that we leave the existing state tort cap liability structure in place, which affects not just the state but also local government. Leave that structure in place to deal with the ordinary types of situations which we see frequently. This situation, I don't think, was anything that was ever envisioned when we created that system. So the idea is to create a separate, one-off type of response to an event that was highly unusual, and hopefully the type of which we won't see again in this state. The bill has two sections. Article 1 creates a concept in the law of a catastrophe fund for survivors. And Section 2 is specific to 35W. It's important, I think, to understand that Article 1 deals with, it simply leaves the concept in law. It would never be invoked. There's no ongoing bureaucracy or anything like that. There's no automatic trigger. It could never be invoked unless the legislature and the legislature passed and the governor signed an appropriation into that fund to trigger it. So it merely leaves in place a structure of what we could use in the future if something like this happens, so that we would not be in a situation of having to respond to a catastrophe on an ad hoc basis. And we heard a bill today in Representative Pawlowski's policy committee to deal with natural disasters and try to create some sort of ongoing structure to deal with that situation. just a few key points. Money appropriated into the fund would not pay punitive damages. It would not cover any kind of attorney fees. No attorney fees would be paid out pursuant to the fund. The fund is administered through a special master, and the special master would be appointed by the Executive Council of the state, consisting of the governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, secretary of state, and state auditor. The special master would have an obligation to report their expenses to the attorney general and to the legislature. They don't have any other kind of function other than the report is simply on cost. There's a 1% cap on the total administrative expenses that can be paid out of the fund expenses that can be used for administration. And that's simply for the sake of making sure that as much money as possible goes to survivors, not to lawyers or other people on a staff. There is a date now set by which time an application must be made to the special master. It's September 1st, 2009, and that date is fairly long, or you know, 2 years, more than 2 years after the disaster. But it's important because certain types of injuries take that long to determine the long-term disability for the survivors. However, survivors could apply immediately, and the special master would have 120 days to respond with a proposed compensation package to that survivor. At that point, the survivor would have 30 days to decide whether to accept that compensation proposal. If they do accept it, as a precondition to receiving it, they have to release any claims that they would have against the state of Minnesota or any municipality or political subdivision arising from the 35W bridge. So they could not accept it without signing a release. Any amounts that the survivor receives from insurance or other kinds of benefits are offset, so that the only thing the state would be paying for is the gap between private insurance that the survivors may or may not have and what their actual expenses are. This is not an attempt to create any kind of a windfall or double recovery type of situation for the survivor, and in fact, the kind of release that they would sign of their right to sue the state would prevent them from having any kind of double recovery in this situation. And we have language now addressing the issue of subrogation by federal self-insured health care plans, ERISA plans, and we have had public testimony that was not rebutted indicating that those plans do not intend to pursue their subrogation rights against the survivor. There's a data practices section, and re-emphasizing this point, this does not in any way constitute an admission of liability by the state of Minnesota in any legal sense. And in fact, it's an attempt to step away from issues of legal liability and try to put money into the hands of the survivors as quickly as we possibly can. The fund could receive gifts from third-party sources. And then we move on to Article 2. That was all in Article 1. Article 2 is specific to 35W. It begins with a legislative finding that the bridge collapse on August 1st constituted the type of catastrophe that the state of Minnesota should respond to using the type of fund that is described in Article 1. It provides that, again, the Executive Council has 30 days to appoint a special master, and it defines survivor to mean that you had to have been on the bridge in order to be eligible for any kind of benefit. Finally here, the bill also states that the emergency relief payments that were established this past fall, which were really for, and in fact only for, people who lost wages as a result of a physical injury on the bridge. So that's the only thing, up to a maximum of $20,000. That's what that emergency relief system paid for. That stops when this fund is receives money in the appropriation. I have to pull out my engrossment here, not my talking point piece. The appropriation for the fund is $39,320,000. And if you look under Subdivision 2 of Section 3, there's an additional appropriation of $680,000 to the Pillsbury United Communities in Minneapolis, which is the umbrella organization for Waite House, the community center that the Children on the Bus were heading back to after a field trip when the bridge collapsed. This is a highly concentrated neighborhood of poverty, and the Wade House has really served as the hub of all services that the kids on that bus have received since that time. They have a 3-year business plan to address, in a more of a case management type of way, to address the needs of these families, and we have the full appropriation immediately, but it paid out over time, the first piece immediately, the second piece August 1st of this year, and then the final on August 1st of 2009, and they're required to report back to the Ways and Means Committee, the legislature, on the expenditure of their funds during that time, so that we can keep some measure of accountability for what they're doing. That is the bill. Certainly, of course, stand for any questions. I think now I've been through 5 committees and have had an opportunity for a lot of discussion and have really worked to address concerns that members have had about various sections of the bill, and would continue to be open to finding the best approach that we can to deal with this terrible situation for these survivors.
Okay, are there questions? Representative Haymark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, I wonder, I've heard, this is my second time hearing the bill, but I brought this up once before, and it seemed like other members of the Public Safety and Civil Justice Committee also had similar questions, that we support the legislation, support the compensation for the victims of the bridge collapse, but wonder if you would be open to not having a bill that actually created a catastrophic survivor compensation for in statute for further possible disasters in the state, if you've given any more thought to that. And in other words, direct it just to the I-35 bridge collapse.
Mr. Chair, Representative Paymar, we have had some discussion about that. And one thing I think that's really important to note is that having something in law in place that we can point to say this is how the state will respond to your situation, if we had had that in August, it would have made an enormous difference for the bridge survivors, to know that there was something in place that they could ask for, that the state could provide, and they would be ready. And in fact, I had the St. Paul Director of Emergency Management came to me after a different committee hearing and said that from an emergency management point of view, helping survivors it's crucial that they have some sense that there is a handoff that they're going to go through, and that he thinks from an emergency management point of view, this kind of concept is an important one. All that being said, I guess I would note that the Senate bill is not structured this way, and I would anticipate we'd end up in conference committee and there would be further discussion about whether it makes sense to do that in the conference committee as well.
Okay, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Winkler, right now the general fund appropriation for this is 39.3. What if the compensation rewards exceed the cap? What if, you know, as the special master is giving these appropriations out, or excuse me, these awards out, is that the right term for it, award? Okay, determining the compensation that's going to be given out, it's done on a case-by-case basis, I'm assuming. What happens if the numbers come in and now they're out of money? What's the next course of action?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, first of all, they're always going to know what the total amount is. And I would anticipate that if I was a special master, I would start with a survey, if you will, of all the injuries and all the claims that are coming in to have a sense of the overall landscape of claims. And that's something that can be done now. Determining to a finer dollar amount down the road could still be done while distributing money meanwhile. I mean, you have to have a rough budget or a rough idea of how much you're going to be paying out and, you know, what percent on the dollar, frankly, the fund will cover for a lot of these awards. So even though there's a long window of time for people to make an application, I think they can still gather the relevant information to make the awards and plan out basically where they're going to get. I don't think, I mean, it would be certainly problematic if they just handed out everybody, you know, to the first 39 people check for $1 million each and said, oh, I'm out of money. And frankly, that really emphasizes the importance of having a highly qualified, well-regarded person in that role. And I think the appointment by the Executive Council helps ensure that that happens.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Winkler, I appreciate you bringing that nice segue to the next part of the conversation we're having about the special master appointment, and we spoke about this in advance. And I do have some concerns about partisan elected officials appointing the special master. Of course, it makes it easier the fact that the council would be 3-2 the opposite party. Some might question my motivation, but I do have legitimate concerns about that. I'm wondering if would you be open to taking a look at that language in terms of, I would think there would need to be some sort of consensus agreement. We would not want a 3-2 vote, maybe requiring a unanimous recommendation of the Executive Council, maybe some sort of, you mentioned Senator Latz's proposal. Are you open to changing that language at all? I'm not going to offer an amendment tonight. Can you just kind of give me your thoughts on that if you share any of the concerns I have?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, I am open to that. A unanimous appointment, I think, could be one way to do that. Having the Chief Justice do it would be another way. But, you know, they may be partisan, but they're also elected, which means that they have an incentive to get it right. If the five of them or three of them in the kind of worst-case partisan situation were to make an appointment and it was a bad one, suddenly it would be the three Democrats who appointed the bad one, and I don't think that would serve their interest. I think all the people involved in making the decision would be highly motivated to get just the right person.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Garofalo, Representative Winkler, of course, the problem would be in defining what is bad and what is good, and that's a conversation we always have. I'm not an attorney, but I do know that a chapter is a pretty big body of law, isn't it? I don't know. You mentioned in the special master, it says that it's exempt from all of Chapter 14. I don't expect you to know that off the top of your head. Can you just highlight some of the items that are exempted? I see there's an exception to Chapter 14 exemption, but when I see an entire chapter of law being excluded from the special master being exempt, I'm just wondering if you could provide a little bit of comfort language to me in terms of what that's covering.
Chair, Representative, I guess I'd have to ask you to point me in the part of the bill that specifically does.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Winkler, I'm talking about section
6. Shepard indicated that he could respond to the question if
Thank
that
you.
Would be all right. Representative Winkler, unless you want to.
Mr. Chair, far be it for me to interrupt Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, members, that Chapter 14 is the rulemaking process in the Administrative Procedure Act. So if the special master were to make policies of general applicability in trying to allocate funds to the survivors, he would not have to go through rulemaking first to do that. But the reference to Section 14.386 is that he would have to publish those in the state register so they'd be available.
Representative Garofalo, does that take care of your question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, a couple questions if you can just recap. You said anybody eligible for an appropriation would have to have been on the bridge, and then what will be the step? They'll have to show some injury, and then what is the compensation for the families who maybe lost a family member? Is that going to be separate, or is that all yet to be determined? And then I have a follow-up.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, I think your first question is, yes, you do have to be on the bridge in order to qualify. I don't think we have any close cases that we're dealing with. Tough cases. Compensation for a family that lost a breadwinner typically would be based in significant part on their the income that they've lost, but there is also in the legal system all the time we engage in the highly unsavory or unhappy prospect of providing monetary compensation for a lost loved one. The bill is set up so that the types of analysis that the legal system uses all the time to do this would be employed here.
And the max, Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Winkler. The max payment, is it still $400,000? There's no max.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, there is no individual limit on recovery or award under this bill. The limit is the total amount of the appropriation. And the total amount of the appropriation has to be divided as fairly as possible among the survivors affected. So there is no upper limit or cap on what one individual could receive.
So last question, Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler. What will the attorneys recover out of this? Will most of victims have a contingency agreement with an attorney, or are we bypassing so all this money will go directly? Or are they going to have to, everybody have to suit up with legal counsel and pay a third out to contingency and see who can get the best portion of the $39 million?
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, actually the bill states that there would be no attorney fees paid out of any of the awards.
Thanks.
Representative Tan?
Actually, Representative said what I wanted to say better, which is the sense that having dealt with this situation in which the people that were involved, if we had been able to point to something, the amount of psychological damage that property would have been averted. I don't want to play it on a church psychologist, but one of the things that we saw was the events that they were having. If everyone cared about rebuilding the bridge and nobody cared about rebuilding their lives, and there was no attention being paid to that, and the idea sort of pointed to something like this in statute, even though it wouldn't take effect until the legislature met and appropriations declared a catastrophe, it would have been an enormous benefit to them. Or, possibly should have even done it in the special session. With the structure in place, it could have even just done the other proceed the next step.
Okay, any further discussion on the motion by Representative Tan that House File 2553, the first committee in Grossman, be recommended to pass and be referred to Ways and Means? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Thank you, Representative Winkler. And the next bill up is House File 3055 by Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, I move that House File 3055 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee of Ways and Means.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman and members, this is the deficiency bill, and we've worked with the administration, the Department of Finance, Commissioner Hansen, and others to have this bill structured as they see as the deficiencies that need to be addressed in an immediate fashion. There are two parts of the deficiency bill. One of them is $175,000 of general fund money, and the other three parts, I think this has, you probably have this in your folder, of the chiropractor examining board, $150,000, the dentistry board, $100,000, and the veterinary medicine board, $54,000. My understanding, these are contested cases awards that are for those small agencies that will come from the special revenue fund. We have checked with, and Mr. Mark will probably confirm, they've done some checking with those three boards, and some of them may be, they're small agencies, they may be pressed and at some particular point have to make that up, but they have the ability, at least this particular biennium, to have that particular enough money to meet those expenses, but they can't spend it unless we appropriate money for them. The general fund is the sesquicentennial. They have a, as you know, the stamp is before us. That will be, by the way, one of the first stamps in the nation that's honoring a birthday of a state that is a national stamp. Most of those stamps are regional type stamps, but the people who make that determination like it so well that when they release this stamp in, I think, May, it will be a nationwide release of the stamp. The rates go up to 42 cents in May, and when you go throughout the nation, you will get this stamp as the 42-cent stamp. It is the new stamp. But in order for that organization to continue, they need some additional money. We appropriated some money for them last year, but we limited the amount of money that they can spend on staff. Their staff right now should be laid off because in order for them to make up education, unemployment compensation, and other expenses that go with a staff, and they don't have any money, they have to account for those particular costs. And so the $175,000 is a very small amount that will take the staff payments through the end of the celebration of the fiscal year. There will be another appropriation request from them, but that will be done in the regular session. So this deficiency bill is for a very small amount of money that will solve those particular problems for very small organizations that have no other opportunities than the legislature appropriating some money for them. And with that, I ask your support.
Representative Kahn?
You don't like the picture, I suppose.
No, I like it. I just have a question.
Sure.
Which is, what bridge is that? Is it likely to stay up?
Maybe Representative Zapolowski can answer the picture.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, it's the Winona Bridge. It's not in as bad a shape as the Hastings Bridge, but it could use some repairs, and the bridge that is only partially there is the old railroad bridge, which my grandfather actually manned and turned when barges would come up and down the river. The section that's missing is the section that's just a turn. So.
Was that the Zapolowski to Milwaukee Road?
Mr. Chair, that would have been, yes.
When I was across that bridge, I think.
When it was a whole bridge, Mr. Chair, you were.
Yeah, of course it would have been at that point. Yes, sir. You're too quick. I was going to ask Representative Tolbert. Some of us over here can't see that.
Oh, well,
hold it up.
Jane Leonard is the executive.
If you're going to bring a crop, you should hold it up.
By the way, he has done just an excellent job. I replaced Mary Murphy on the sesquicentennial, and the staff of that organization has done just a wonderful job. This is they went to the staff, how good they are. They, after she was employed just a few weeks, went to the national committee that does staff. And to get in there, you have to have a presidential declaration of some kind. They went in and said, we're celebrating the 150th birthday of Minnesota. They said so. Well, they said, we want to have a stamp. And they said, so? Well, they worked with the organization that designates the stamp and came up with this design, as I understand it. I think that Representative Pawlowski is correct. It's a picture that an artist took from Minnesota out of the Winona area. They didn't want to designate it where it was from. But they thought it was such a wonderful stamp in and of itself. But the staff worked very, very hard to get them to not only allow it to become a stamp, but to allow it to become a national stamp, and also to be the first issue of a stamp when you change, well, I don't know if that's good or bad, but change to the higher price of the stamp. But that means that lots of people will buy this particular stamp because it won't be a flag. It's from Minnesota. And it gives us a great deal of exposure throughout the nation as a celebration. And I think it just speaks to the quality of the staff that we had and some of the volunteers that died.
And Representative Saylor has an important announcement relative to the stamp.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It also speaks to the quality of my constituency because one of my constituents is the photographer that took that photograph. He's also a friend of mine, and it was quite a wonderful surprise to hear that announced that it was actually his photograph.
Very much an honor to be here. So I think that if nothing else, I think we need to keep the staff on board and have a paycheck.
Let's see, we got Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Representative Pawlowski, in 1956, 2 weeks after I graduated from high school, they put me on a train to go to Fort Leonard Woods, and it was the Milwaukee Road, so I must have been over that bridge.
So he's probably going to vote against it.
My grandfather was operating.
The reason I raised that question, my grandfather was the conductor on the Milwaukee Road, and upon occasion I would be able to ride with him. And when he was, now if the passenger train went over that, which I assume it did, he was also very strict because the conductor is the one in charge of the train, and I always had to have a ticket. Couldn't ride for free, and then I would have to hold the ticket up high enough so everybody in the car would see him come along and pick up the ticket so that nobody could claim that his grandson was getting a free ride on the train.
You didn't pay for the ticket, he just paid for the ticket.
Oh, we would buy that, yeah. But he was also the union business agent for many years, and so he had to be careful for some of those reasons as well. Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman or Representative Solberg, more of a process question. I'm wondering, and either one of you can answer this question, Representative Winkler's bill and then this bill, what processes, what changes need to take place to the budget resolution process to allow these to come to the floor?
Well, I could answer that, but the chair of the Ways and Means Committee is here, and the budget resolution is in his purview. So,
Mr. Chairman, Representative Goffel, maybe Bill Marks will make sure I answer this correctly. I should let him answer.
Or our other expert is Bill
Marks. But the budget resolution is effective for the last year. We have not adopted a new budget resolution, so I suppose if you want to, you can add $1 million to this if you want to add a particular amendment on the House floor when it reaches there. But there is no budget resolution at the present time.
So if you want to buy a lot of stamps?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Marks, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, yes. The rules say the budget resolution is effective for the year in which it's adopted.
Thank you.
And Representative Grayling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Back to the staff. I just want to know, are these out yet already? I haven't seen them.
They have been announced, but I think the first day of issue is, maybe I could have Jane Leonard do the person who knows more than I do, come forward and answer those questions. Would you allow that, Mr. Chair?
That'd be fine.
Okay.
And if you could identify yourself for the record.
Yes, I'm Jane Leonard, Executive Director. Thank you, Chairman Carlson and members. The stamp is coming out on May 17th at 1 p.m. on the Capitol grounds. So we hope that you can come out and be with us for the ceremony. As Representative Solberg said, it is going to be a nationally recognized stamp, and in fact we were told by the post office authorities that there will probably be thousands of collectors after it, because as the representative said about the photographer, this is the first in a series of photographic stamps, and the photographer Richard Hamilton Smith from Park Rapids did take the picture here of the Mississippi River at Winona, and we think it's a great stamp because it connects all of us. The Mississippi goes all the way through the state, and its watershed affects all of us here. So we're very happy to have this. And this is just one of the many things that our small but dedicated staff is doing. There are two of us full-time, myself and Karen Rickert right here, and six interns, and that is it. And we are using your money wisely, but we would certainly appreciate a little more so that we can get through the summer, and the Statehood Week, which this will be a part of, kicks off May 11th. We have capitals for a day throughout that week, the 12th through the 16th, come back here to St. Paul for the Statehood Weekend, And then there are hundreds of celebrations across the state during the summer, and we'll all come back for the state fair, which we did get funding for, by the way, for the big top Chautauqua tent to be there all 12 days to do the Song of the North Star show four times free each day for citizens of Minnesota. And we'll also be doing Minnesota people from Minnesota talking to Minnesotans in the air-conditioned tent in between. So there's just a lot of things happening, and we're very proud of what we've done. And with commissioners like Representative Solberg and others, we've done a great job, but we could sure use a little more help.
I wonder, will those stamps be available here at the Capitol then that day? I remember when the coin, the quarter came out with Minnesota, we were able to purchase.
Mr. Chairman, yes, it will. The post office is setting up a tent that will be selling the first day issue envelopes, and you can get your canceled stamp, you can get your first day issue cachet with the sesquicentennial logo on it and the stamp. And we are also creating special pictorials, they call them, for all the capitals for a day. So Bemidji, Thief River Falls, Detroit Lakes, New Ulm, Winona, those will all get special envelopes with the stamp as well. And for those of you in Minneapolis, I want to just say that we are confirming that we will have a special dedication ceremony on June 14th with the Minneapolis Women's Club and the R. Godfrey House. He was the first postmaster of Minneapolis, and that's going to be happening on June 14th, which is a big day on the riverfront, and we're coordinating that with the Minneapolis Sesquicentennial Committee.
My other question, if I might, is how much of Wisconsin is in the
zero. It's all Minnesota.
We did get that same, Mr. Chair, we did get that same question from collectors, and there's a little bit of Wisconsin, but we do share the river, so.
I like people from Wisconsin. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, someone asked me, I think, I said that the stamp is going to be, and I need to clarify this myself, 42 cents, and it says 41 there. So maybe Jane can answer my question to her, if that's okay.
I can explain that, Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg. When we had this poster made, or the post office actually had this made for the unveiling of the design in Representative Pulaski's district, Winona, that was October 6th, I believe, also at Winona State University, which is celebrating its sesquicentennial. And so they made it with a 41-cent indicia, and have told us, as Representative Solberg reported, that it will be one of the first, if not the first, 42-cent stamp, meaning it will have great sales across the country. Unfortunately, we do not get any of that money, but we can be very proud that Minnesota will be all around the country.
Representative Kreiling, I didn't mean. Did you have any additional questions? I assumed you were done, and maybe you weren't.
Mr. Chair, I think I was, but I just was trying to find out how soon one could get a bunch of them. I think that's great that we have the envelopes. Will they be? Do you think they'll run out in the post office? If you wanted to buy like 2,000 of them all at once.
Wow. Well, Mr. Chair.
If it isn't a question.
All right.
It's the 29th.
Mr. Chair and member, we can put in a special request for you. The stamps will be on sale as of May 17th. We will let them know that people will want to buy them in that kind of quantity. The Minneapolis Post Office District and the U.S. Post Office event planning people have already been here now, and they are very excited about the strong interest, as you have one too, in this stamp. So we'll do whatever we can. Let me know how many you need.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, one of the other things that the sesquicentennial has is, and it was passed out, I think, on the first day by Representative Loffler, is the medallion. And you can buy, you know, there's a couple of gold flakes.
Representative Solberg, Chairman, we have bronze medallions. I think I have some samples. I'll just pass them around. And silver medallions that are minted. They call them the second strike, and they are numbered 1858 to 2008. So if you have a special birthday, an anniversary, invite you to purchase those. And the bronze medallions and aluminum medallions are available for purchase. And we are also distributing the aluminum medallions to various school children that ask for us to come into the schools and talk about the sesquicentennial.
But, Mr. Chairman, the aluminum ones are reasonable.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The bronze and the gold and the silver are probably above my pay grade.
Yes.
but that's not true. We expect you to buy one.
I don't see any other questions, so Representative Solberg, would you like to renew your
motion? Mr. Chairman, I would remove my motion that House File 3055 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Now, I think a lot of us like this bill, and can we be assured that the Chair of Ways and Means is going to act promptly on it?
I think so. Mr. Chairman, for your information, Mr. Paymar asked, Representative Paymar asked, there is, might be one additional deficiency on a small agency, and I asked him tonight, he said if the finance talked to me, or is there another bill, and this is the one that goes through the past. I asked him to check with finance on that. We worked very closely with Department of Finance, Commissioner Hansen, on these particular issues. I don't think that the representative is here tonight. And if there is an amendment, it would have to be cleared through finance, to the governor's office in that respect, in Ways and Means. So there may be a small addition to this. I wanted to just tell you and inform you of that.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much.
And with that, one announcement. The Finance Committee will be meeting toward the end of next week, and we'll post that meeting as soon as possible. So it'll be toward the end of the week that we'll be meeting.
So, Mr. Chairman, just confirming no meeting on Monday?
No.
Okay, thanks.
And then the next bill probably capital investment. It'll be the one that I was referencing was the capital investment bill sometime toward the end of the week. So it'll be a big bill. With that, meeting adjourned.